When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode of the Warriors Huddle is brought to you by our presenting sponsor, the Athletic Club Oakland, a local sports bar I fucking love. Look, all of our social lives took a nasty hit during the pandemic, and one of the awesome things COVID stole was the ability to watch sports with friends. It's something I've loved my whole life, and good news, the Athletic Club has our backs and has given that right back to us. The ACO has shut down their entire side street, not some parklets. I'm talking about the entire side street, created an enormous outdoor space, called that space the Town Gardens, and filled it with tables and huge TVs and their full complement of great food. It's big, it's comfortable, but maybe most important, it's a great spot to watch any and every sport with anyone and everyone you want to. The Athletic Club is now our go-to spot to watch all sports, and with the NFL right up on the horizon, we hope you're going to join us there. In fact, if I see you at the ACO and you're in any type of huddle gear, beer, in fact, maybe beers on me. The Athletic Club Oakland, where sports fans can be sports fans again.
We're going to bring y'all into our huddle.
You are in the Warriors Huddle with me, Bram. No MT today, at least up front, but with me per usual, my master of all things sound, Maxine.
How's it going?
Boys, I am fired up to announce, joining us for the first time in the huddle, a man who uses vocal talents and sports passion to go from butcher shop owner to morning show mainstay, the co-host of the Morning Roast on 95.7 The Game. And a guy who skillfully threaded the needle this morning between giving Bonte shit for his birthday and celebrating it, Mr. Joe Shasky. What's going on, Joe?
What's up, guys? I'm really excited. Thank you for having me on. Honest to God, it means a lot. I came up in podcasting. I still do a lot of podcasting. So anybody that's out here getting it, let's do it. Let's get it together. Let's collaborate.
The pleasure is ours, and you can share in some angst with me, man. So every time we have a new guest, like I have heard your voice, I listen to the show, I feel like we're friends, but the practical reality is shit, we've never met. It's the first time you're on. And generally speaking, when I have somebody on for the first time, it's not nerves, but I get kind of angsty and kind of please that person. So if I start like speaking too much, right, or kissing your ass, any of that shit, just use your professionalism, pretend like it's not happening. You know, help us get through that. All right,
dude, half the crap coming out of my mouth is literally straight out of my ass. So believe me, I understand. And like some of the stuff that I say, the funny part is the producers, Bonte, they'll look at me and they're like, dog, where are you going with this? And so you just try to throw it together. Sometimes it's a Picasso, sometimes it's a trash can.
Well, if you've gotten it up to 50%, Joe, you're 50% better than me. So, you know, you are there. And then so that we can all kind of share in the scenario here.
Hell yeah.
As part of Joe's professional, you know, we're doing this over Zoom. Joe showed up and he actually has his video on. Maxime and I do not, although we're going to have an announcement about that later on in the show, but let the record reflect, like, Joe's studio looks hella nice. This fool looks hella professional. So the pressure is on, Joe. We only have one real segment today. It's a segment called Five Golden Questions. It's basically our mailbag. which we're going to get to in a second. But I tell you what, it'd be ridiculous if we had you on for the first time and I didn't get into some stuff about you. So I got some questions for you. And let me start here, right? So I know that you are a fifth generation San Franciscan. I know you are from the Bay. I know that you love all the teams. But what I don't know, man, what's your sports hierarchy? Yeah, like between the Giants, between the Niners, between the Warriors, what team sticks out most for you?
Well, I think this is going to sound like it's a cliche, but this is the honest to God truth. In my neighborhood, whatever sport was in or closest to the postseason or in the middle of the season for, you know, whether it was Park and Rec or I was playing grammar school ball, like whatever I was in season, that to me was the sport I loved the most. Now, as I'm an adult, like personally playing, I'm going to go play softball later on tonight. I still coach hoops. I'm coaching volleyball right now. I love golf. And you know, I love football. Like I don't play football right now. I'm damn near 40 years old, but like I'm literally into whatever is going on at that particular time. I don't really have a hierarchy. Like my wife would tell you, I literally scream equal amounts at the television at all three of the major sports. I love being in the gym. Like I really do. I love being in the gym. I love coaching. I love playing. I think that's the one thing that like, it's just, I love doing it. Then I love going out onto the field and playing baseball, playing catch. Like to this day, I'll play catch with my brother or my dad, literally in the front yard. You know what I mean? Like I live to do that. Just little stuff, you know? So I know it sounds cliche. I really don't have like a hierarchy, and it sounds like that's how we grew up in my neighborhood. Some days we played baseball. Some days we played basketball. Some days we played flag football. I didn't get into golf until I was an older, you know, individual. But now I'm able to share that with nephews, nieces, my wife, my grandfather, who's 86 years old, my dad, my brother. So honestly, like we could be at a family party like we were last week for my sister's kid, and there was a 3-foot dunk hoop, and all of a sudden a heated 3-on-3 game broke out with a ball that was flat. Literally, okay, in the driveway. That's the kind of crazy, psycho-ass family that we have. We will compete over anything.
I feel that, dude. I 100% feel that. I've had family functions fall apart over, like, made-up games. Oh, like, something we made up for my 6-year-old, and then 5 minutes later, she's no longer playing, and, like, my parents and I hate each other because we want one of us to win. But I tell you what, I saw this possibility coming. So I have kind of shaved this question down to try to force you into an answer. And here it is. Yeah. So good news, Joe. You get to control the fucking future, man. Mm-hmm. And I am going to give you a multiple choice. You get to pick one of these three realities. All right. Reality number one, the Niners win the Super Bowl behind Jimmy G while developing Trey Lance. Reality number two, the Giants win the World Series this year, and on the way, Joe, they beat the Dodgers in a series finally. And option number three, the Warriors win the title, and while they're doing that, Steph walks away with the finals MVP. You only get one of them, man. You can only enjoy one of those scenarios. Which one are you picking?
Oh, my God. I haven't seen my 49ers win one in 25 years. Like, we've been so close. It feels like we're the bridesmaids. I would lean in that direction. But I'm not going to lie to you, man. Like, I want to see Steph get to Joe Montana's number. I want to see him get to 4. I want to see him get to 5. I've said already, off top, Jerry Rice is the greatest athlete of all time, in my eyes, right? Barry Bonds, very close second. He's got all the cheating scandals attached to him. So it feels like you can't put him up there. But likability and the ability to change the way the game is played. I played in an era where if you shot three-pointers, coach was ready to yank you out. Like literally no one shot threes when I was in high school. And then now every single team I coach in third grade, I'm like, hey, let's do some layups. Where do you think the kids are starting? They're starting from the three-point line and half court trying to work their way in. It's totally changed. And you know what? It's actually a good shot these days, which is crazy because there's less bodies competing for them at the three-point line than there is underneath where they can get their shot blocked. So I'm going to go with Steph Curry right now, to be totally honest with you. In terms of what I want to see from him, I want to see him win a finals, get to 4 or 5. That would be freaking awesome. I mean, it really would. But I'm not going to lie, dude, the Niner one, because I've seen Steph win them, I haven't felt and tasted that Niner championship in so long. It's right there too. And the Giants, look, man, baseball, I never thought the Giants were going to get one. So they got the 3, and I almost feel a little like kind of fat and happy like the king. You know what I mean? So like I can kind of go 5-10 more years and be okay. It's been 25 years on the Niners, man. I guess I lean Niners over Steph.
That makes sense to me. Maxime, how would you answer that, dude? I don't think I've ever thrown this towards you. So don't give me the hierarchy of teams. Just take the multiple choice for the future. You can pick A through C.
It's which a tough question.
Are you taking?
It is a really tough question. I mean, I love basketball first and foremost. And on top of it all, you know, I grew out in the farther East Bay. So I grew up with friends that were A's fans. And while my family is Giants fans, right, like I'm sort of pulled in two directions. And that's the same thing, even though the Raiders don't exist in the Bay anymore, they still exist in the Bay in my heart, right? So again, kind of pulled in two directions. The Warriors are the only team that, you know, there's only one of them, right, for the sport around here. So that's my allegiances are not at all divided.
I am kind of a hater. Joe, you're going to pick that up as we go forward. I'm a psychopath, but I'm also a hater.
I know
so,
that.
Yeah, there you go. And so let me illustrate that to you now. The Warriors would be my pick. They have become my distant favorite over all other teams. But there's some hate here, too. So, like, I'm a recovering Raider fan, man. I'm from the East Bay. I had Raider season tickets. Mm-hmm. Now I don't know what to do. You know, like, I'm kind of like a man without a team. I'm not going to fucking root for Vegas, dude. Yeah. I appreciate you saying that. But the only thing that would make it worse, and I think you will respect this as a member of the Bay, is if the Niners win a championship and I have to watch my, like, all my boys who are Niner fans celebrate that in my face, you know? So I'm not down on that. And the Giants thing, what a weird year. So I am a Giants fan. I am a Giants season ticket holder.
Oh,
and like this whole year, man, has been, you know, like I feel like we didn't believe it through most, you know, the
For
first
sure.
few months. Then once Chris Bryant added, like we are all allowing ourselves to dare to think World Series, but nobody wants to say it out loud, you know. So the easiest thing here for me is the Warriors. Let's take a quick break and hear from our sponsors.
Attention listeners across the galaxy, all the way from Australia to Houston. Do we have a pube problem? If so, our friends at Manscaped have cleared you for takeoff with their fourth generation and brand new Lawnmower 4.0. This fourth generation trimmer features a cutting edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents, thanks to their advanced skin-safe technology. The Lawnmower 4.0 also has a 7,000 RPM motor, a new multifunction on-off switch, and is even waterproof. Kick your pubes to the next planet with the Performance Package 4.0. The orbits in your pants will feel like you're in zero gravity when you use the best tools for the job from the leaders in male grooming. Join the 2 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped and get your rocket ready for takeoff by going to manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping with the code FANSIDED20. That's 20% off plus free shipping with the code FANSIDED20 at manscaped.com. For a clean Trinity and beyond, your space balls will thank you.
And we are back. So I mentioned this, dude, in the open, but it's worth celebrating. You've gone from butcher shop owner to regular sports radio caller to now co-host of the morning show in your home city. And I was going to ask, look, is this a dream job? But I don't have to. You answer that for me. I'm looking at a tweet from you. Quote, I pitch myself every single day. Blessed is an understatement. Me and one of my best friends at Bonte Hill waking up the city we love and grew up in, talking about the dreams we love and root for. Dreams do come true. I sincerely am grateful. What a day. And then it's at Chase Center 95.7. The game. That was after you guys took over Chase Center and recorded for him. So let me turn this into a question. How the fuck did you do this, man? You know, it's not everybody is gonna, you know, the easy thing is we all want a dream job. But the harder thing, the thing I'm interested in is, what did you do? Because talent isn't enough, right? I mean, like, yes, you've got that. You've got the passion. You can talk out of your ass, like we already talked about. But it's more than that. You know, how did you elevate it? What does this path look like?
Well, man, this is a complicated question. And this is where I go back to sports, right? Like my whole life, all I did was play on two teams, whatever sport it was, soccer, flag football, baseball, basketball, two teams all year round. That's what we did. We really didn't have travel ball when I was growing up. Like that wasn't a thing. You played for your park. You know why? Because me and my brother would walk to the park every single day. Crocker Park, St. Mary's Park. We'd go to Excelsior Park, like wherever. And you just hung out. It was a different era. You know what I mean? It was a different way. And I bounced around high schools. I was a bad kid. I had a lot of stuff going on in my family life and things like that. And I had a lot of anger in my heart. And I got kicked out of so many different schools, and I ended up not even getting my high school diploma. So for me, I was pushed right into the work environment, probably more than anyone else who's in sports media. Because most of the people in sports media, either they're former athletes who, you know, usually played Division I or played professional at some level, or they went to college to get a sports degree. Well, I don't have any of those. I literally started working in the back of a butcher shop when I was 14 years old to pay for some of my travel teams and squads and whatnot, high school teams, summer league teams that I was playing on, just so that we could afford it. And so I think that kind of changed, you know, my path, and I started working and never thought that me getting into media would ever be anything. I worked warehouse jobs. I applied to Walgreens and got rejected. I worked in grocery stores. And then, like, literally, you know, I had run-ins with the law and things like that. And I had to, like, basically look myself in the mirror. My uncle said to me, "Are you going to be a victim the rest of your life, or are you going to try to save yourself?" You know, and addiction and different things that were going on. I basically looked in the mirror and said, "All right, I got to stop, you know, trying to woe is me and cry and things like that." And I said, I'm going to start my own business, because no one would hire me. I had a felony on my record. No one would hire me. High school education, no college. I mean, I tried to go to City College for a little while. It was a disaster living out on my own. So I started my little meat shop. I ran that for a couple of years. I got a great opportunity working for a different company. The whole time I would call into sports talk radio. All right. And one day, because of social media, it was like 2008, 2009, Sal Castaneda, who knew my uncle from Reardon, said, "Hey, you need to come on to one of my podcasts." And like, okay, whatever. Didn't make much of it. A couple years go by. Eventually we link up and I go and do the podcast with him. And he kind of whispers in my ear, "Man, you need to start your own podcast." I kind of laughed at him. And then I ended up doing a couple different episodes with him. And this is before technology allowed you to do what you can do now. Like, now anybody can grab their iPhone and create content. Like, it wasn't that way back in the day. You had to have credentials in journalism. You had to be a writer. You had to do something or be someone to get your foot in the door. And so I would call into Damon Bruce's show. I would call into Gary Radnich. I'd call into Ralph. I mean, I called into anyone. Rick Barry. And we only had one station for the longest time. And then eventually I ended up getting an opportunity with Damon Bruce where he just let me get on air. And we became friends. And he would come into my meat shop and support me. And he said, "Man, of all the people that call in, I think you have an opportunity to do this." Well, eventually, I don't know if it was like 2015, 2016, I started doing a podcast. And dude, I'd get like 5 listens. And it'd be like, my family and my homies, you know what I mean? Oh, yeah. And it sounded like a Wu-Tang concert tape from like the early 90s, where it just sounded horrible. Like, the recording was horrible. I listened back, I'm screaming and yelling on the microphone about the Tom Sula 49ers or God knows what with the Warriors and Mark Jackson. And I would send the links to the iTunes, and this is way at the beginning of iTunes, every single week to the program director at 95.7 The Game. I did this for a year or two. And this guy laughed at me, didn't want to do anything with me. And the whole time, social media, you start to build like a presence, if you will, on social media. Not that I'm anybody special, but I became friends with somebody like Bonte, who we kind of knew each other, but never really knew each other. We got a lot of overlapping friends because the city's a small place. And the next thing you know, I got an opportunity to come in and do an hour with Damon Bruce. And I came in a suit because, you know, your boy, I owned one suit, the suit I got married in. And I thought I was going to pitch myself to the program director because I've always been in sales. Said to the guy, "Give me a chance. Give me a chance. Give me a chance." He said, "Why don't you call in every single day? We'll run this gimmick. You'll be the caller of the day." He wouldn't pay me. He wasn't doing anything. I was like, okay. Well, he gets fired. And the new guy who's there now, Matt Nahegan, comes in and he basically says to me, "Hey, somebody left. We have an opportunity. I'll give you a chance on a Saturday with Matt Kolsky." On that exact same day, I get this opportunity, my first ever show, Richard Sherman signs with the 49ers. And I just go absolutely buck Louis crazy. I get a phone call back from him and he's like, "I've never heard anybody like you. You're going to get a job here, you know, make you $15 an hour or whatever the hell it was." I was like, "I'll do it for free, for crying out loud." And then over the next couple of years, I took every single shift I could possibly take, nights, weekends, you name it. I'm still working 2 jobs. And I worked my you know what off. Got an opportunity to work with Chris Townsend at night, who I dearly love and taught me so many different things. He ends up leaving. They give me an opportunity to host the show for a while by myself. And then they bring in Ryan Covey, who joined the station. And Ryan taught me anything and everything. And we were allowed to kind of do our own thing at night. And I'm literally never thought that this would ever be an opportunity. I know it's a long-winded way of putting it, but perseverance. That's literally the story of me. Is I'm a person who was raised in the gutter. My uncle says it's like a rat and a puppy. You get thrown in a cage. Who's going to come out? The rat is the sewer rat. And I'm the sewer rat that somehow found his way out of the cage. And I'm just lucky as hell to be here, man. And I don't take it for granted because I've worked every kind of job that you possibly can work. And I know how expensive these tickets are because I spend to this day my own money on these tickets and on this gear. And it's not just the teams. This is like a lifestyle. My grandfather still calls me screaming and yelling about Tyler Roger in the eighth inning. My dad is like sending me text messages nonstop about Jimmy G staring down receivers, about Steph Curry's behind the back pass in the game 7 2016 finals where we had the whole family over on Father's Day. My dad almost broke my television. My wife almost kicked us all out of the house. Like, this isn't just something that I like to do. This is literally ingrained in my life, and I volunteer and I coach at different levels. And so, man, if it wasn't sports, I literally would not know what I'd be doing with myself.
I fucking love that. I think it was Bruce Springsteen. Talk about a random ass reference. But years and years and years ago, I heard him talking about his career, and that's where I got that talent isn't enough line. He said, look, you know, talent's fucking one thing, but the people are never going to find that talent unless you find a way to get it to them. Mm-hmm. And what you just described wasn't just perseverance, man. What you described was hard work, perseverance, mm-hmm. pride. You know, I mean, there's a lot of things involved. Three follow-ups for me. One, you and I have a lot in common. You said you had a lot of problems growing up. Let's just say my first car accident came at the age of 13.
Two, wow.
You can go ahead and say the word ass on this show. I mean, I've dropped enough F-bombs like in the front 10 minutes here, so go for it. Finally, three, I've got another personal question for you. And what I want to do is prove to you I've basically stocked you in preparation for today, and our crossover here will be Matt Kolsky. So I pulled a quote from a Matt Kolsky article, one from SF Examiner, called Butcher Boy Delivering the Bacon to Washington High School. Here's the quote. I want to keep other young men and women from repeating the same stupid mistakes that I made and help them realize that you can use sports as an outlet to not only do really good things for your own life, but for others as well. I've coached for over a decade. About 11 or 12 years ago, I had a nephew who was in school and they were looking for a coach, and I kind of backed into it. Looking back, I can honestly say it changed my life because it made me look at everything in a different light. How young people are shaped and who has influenced them really does matter. I saw so many people, whether in my own experiences or watching from afar, doing it the wrong way for the wrong reasons. That was your quote, obviously mm-hmm. talking about your coaching background. So my first few follow-ups, you've already answered. Yeah, I was going to ask, what did you coach? What did it add? You know, that kind of stuff. So I'm just going to get to the kind of entertaining one. So you've been coaching for hell of long. It sounds like you've been coaching a lot of different sports, a lot of different ages. Here's my question for you. What's some of the worst shit you've seen either a parent or a kid do as a coach? Like just some inappropriate, whatever it was, what springs to mind?
Well, let me give you the funniest one of all time. I'm coaching a baseball team. It's got to be like 8-9 years ago. And I'm going, all right, where's, I'm just going to say the kid's name's Billy because that's not his name. Where's Billy? Why isn't he on deck? I'm looking at my little brother, and my little brother's like, I don't know where he is, because you're always going to have the right kid on deck in the batting order because you'd be shocked if you don't stay on it, you get called out. It's a nightmare. And the kid's like, oh, yeah, somebody's in the bushes taking a dump. I'm like, taking a dump? What? Are you kidding me? Now, again, this is San Francisco. Some of the parks, like the restrooms are literally locked, you know, because they don't want the homeless people going in there and messing them up. And I'm screaming and yelling for where the kid's at. He comes running out and the shirt is untucked and it looks like there's dirt or something on the back of the jersey.
No.
The kid steps into the batter's box, puts his hand up, he's digging in. And the umpire, who's a high school kid, because this is like a seventh grade game, calls timeout and goes, kid, I think there's poop on the back of your pants.
Oh my God.
And he goes, no, there isn't. And he goes, yeah, there is. So the kid reaches down into the batter's box, gets a big pile of dirt, rubs it on his pants, and goes, I'm good. And I was no, you're not. And I took him out of the game, and I made him go, you know, change and do all that. It was absolute nightmare. Look, here's the problem with most sports. It's for the kids. That's the problem. The majority of people who play sports, myself included, we're not going to go to the next level. You're not going to go to the pros. We're talking about 1% of 1% of 1% of 1%. But what you will learn is certain skills that will carry you no matter what industry or whatever walk of life you're going to be in. How to lose. You know how much you lose in life? You probably aren't going to get the job. You're probably not going to get the promotion. You're probably not going to date the prom queen. You're probably not going to meet many girls that actually like you back in the club scene when you're in your early 20s.
I feel like this is a documentary of my life, dude. Like, I mean, Jesus, like you're reading my diary.
You get rejected a zillion times, but it's how you react to that and what you do when the chips are stacked against you, how you treat teammates, how do you deal with winning, all these different things. Like, if you suck, like, here's my favorite. There's a kid, my niece is a great example. She's a great basketball player, a phenomenal basketball player on all these elite Jason Kidd travel basketball teams. She stinks in volleyball. She wanted to quit in sixth grade. And I'm like, no, you need to learn to be the 11th person on a 12-man bench. You need to know what it's like to be like that, because someday you're going to be on some other basketball team where you're not the superstar. And it's the best thing that ever happened to her. And that's what sports is about. It's not blowing up your ego. It's about putting you in situations and seeing how you react to those. I mean, it's, and also there's obviously the health thing and then the activity aspect of it, because I was a kid, my parents both worked or they were up to God knows what. And so if me and my brother didn't have organized sports after school, we would have been getting in way more trouble than we already did. And believe me, we got into plenty of trouble. So growing up in the inner city, it's hard to find a place for young kids to be able to congregate and do something productive with themselves. So if you can coach a bunch of kids, no matter what the sport is, and they don't have to be good, they don't have to be good, you are literally putting them in a position to succeed in other aspects of life. I've seen all these studies, kids that play sports, they don't even have to be good. They are better people and contributors to community. There is a direct correlation to that. And I'm telling you, man, it teaches you success for life.
Do you know how much heart that seventh grader had? I mean, just like sporting heart. So, I mean, maybe this is more like revealing about me, but if it was the World Series, I would not shit in public as a seventh grader. You know, like I'd be so worried and so concerned. And that fool was down to just hit the bushes and then immediately hit the batting box. He deserves a unlimited amount of credit.
Let me tell you this. His father was the offensive line coach at City College football for a long, long time. His dad's old school. I mean, old school. So it doesn't surprise me. I think the kid was playing at UNR rugby for a while. So none of this surprises me. And he's the oldest of like three or four brothers. You know how things go, man. It's just crazy Irish kids.
Well, I'll give you a stupid story so that you can judge me a little bit. So I've mentioned it. I'm a father. My kid's pretty young, man. She's six, and she's just started sports. In fact, this last weekend, Sunday, was the first time she's played in any live game that I watched. It was soccer. Awesome. And it was cool. You know, I was super fired up for it. I've got competitive problems, and we're sitting there watching. And you know, it is what it is. And I realize I'm watching it, you know, maybe 2 minutes in, I'm watching on the wrong sideline. All the other parents over there are, you know, like they're rooting for their kids and their kids are on the other team. And that's fine. It's not like I'm really saying anything. And then we move on. And by some miracle, my kids score. She's not phenomenal, but, you know, like she scores. And they pause for a second. And I'd like to tell you that I played it cool, Joe. Instead, I rushed the field and picked her up like I was Buster Posey and she was Madison Bumgarner after we won the series. Like it was like, dude. And so in my mind, you're like the it's like slow motion and like this like fantastic music is playing. And then I slowly look around and I'm the asshole. Everyone's very upset that I'm on the field. So turning back to you, I mean, you're the professional in this instance. You've coached a lot of things. Was that a father, you know, like embracing his kid's success, or maybe a little bit too much?
Look, obviously there's a fine line, but let me tell you this, man. LeVar Ball's a great example. He gets tons of flack. Do you know how many kids that I know who don't have
to say I was like LeVar Ball, man? Because that's not going to make me feel that good.
No, but I just think he's an extreme case, right? We always look at him and they're like, oh my God, he's suffocating and everything. Dude, that guy has been in his kids' lives. I have a nephew, man. His father lives in Ireland. He flew back there at 13 years old. The dad couldn't even get off the bar stool and look at him. You know, do you know how horrible of a dad you got to be? You know, you're there. You're at the game supporting them. Are you a little suffocating at times when they do something well? Absolutely. But I'd rather that and you be in that person's life than to be nowhere to be found. Because too many times I see, whether it's a mother, father, whomever, someone in their life let them down and they're just not there. So look, man, it's not the end of the world to have to be reeled back in a little. Now, this is where it can get a little ugly, when you're living vicariously through your children and your expectations are unreasonable and you think little Timmy is going to play shortstop for the Yankees if he goes 3-for-3 today, or if you think he bats third in the lineup, or your kid only plays point guard and needs to play all 24 minutes of a 24-minute game. Like, there's obviously limitations to it and everything, but look, man, I don't fault any parent for being excited about their kid succeeding. That's what it's all about. My dad, he coached a lot of our teams growing up, and he was so hard on me. I could never do enough. And he always felt like, hey, I got to critique you more than the others because I don't want these other parents or other grandparents thinking that I'm soft on my own kid. So you'll learn in time how to strike that balance. But the fact that you're even there, That's what this is about, man. It's about memories. It's not about the goals.
I'll take this. I love this. Maxime, make sure that we sign up Joe like on a weekly basis if he's down. And my new goal now, before the next game, I'm going to teach my kid how to shit in the bushes before she gets out there. Let's jump into the segment, man. Five golden questions, right? So fancy name, easy concept. Really, all this is a mailbag. People are nice enough to shoot us questions. Some logistical warnings, man. They occasionally get personal. I've seen the questions we're going to be answering today. Yeah, they get in and out. Logistical point number two. I find, because we're going to be doing some predictions today, I find predictions without any stakes to be crazy boring, right? I mean, for what? So we have a listener out there, Maddie Stats, who keeps track of everything we do, and at the end of the year comes back and kicks out who was our prediction champion, which leads to the third point, and it's the one that sucks the most. The one who is our current prediction champion is your boy, Bonte Hill. And I am so tired of calling him that, dude. So today's goal is twofold. We are beating Bonte's ass, hopefully. And two, I'm going to get some advice from you. Let's start with a prediction. And it's kind of an interesting one. So this person asks, how many points per game will Steph average next season? So that you have some parameters. Career, 24.2. Yeah. Last season, 32. To give us both some time to think, let's throw it towards Maxime. Maxime, give us your response.
Yeah, well, we got to think about where he was at last season, who he was surrounded by, and the sort of the stakes for that game. You know, I think let's hope that Klay comes back a little bit more right midseason, see some more from Wiggins. We got to get Poole a little bit more of a shoot. So I don't think he's going to get up to 32. I'm going to say like 29 and a half.
Yeah, I'm going to follow suit, and I'm going to make it for optimistic reasons, right? I mean, there's a reason why Steph was a god last year and why he put up 32. Part of it was his skill set, and it's got to be recognized. The other part is he didn't have any damn help on the offensive end, man. He was being guarded by five dudes and still put up 32. If next year goes the way that we are all desperately hoping it does, if Klay is close to Klay, if Jordan Poole is close to the sixth man we think he is, if Kuminga contributes, if any of these things go down, then those points hopefully will be coming from his points per game. So I'll knock it down even a little further than you. I'm going to say 27 and a half. Joe, what do you got?
Yeah, it's funny because right when you said it, before I heard either of you guys' predictions, I was thinking 28 and a half is kind of the sweet spot for me. Like, honestly, and it just happens to be in between you guys. So I'm going to go with 28 and a half. The key thing for me is I think that they realized as we got down the stretch, obviously the tailbone injury was devastating to him. He was gassed in fourth quarters, straight up gassed. And obviously the guy's going to be gassed when he's working off ball, running through 8,000 screens the way he does. I think they're going to try to really, especially early on in the season, limit the minutes and limit how this guy is being used and try to make the game easier for him. I think he's going to be as efficient as hell, though. So even if the numbers are down in terms of the overall points per game, I bet the minutes are down too, and I bet he's probably more efficient when it's all said and done.
Yep, and that's what we're hoping for. I mean, with if those numbers go that way, if his points per game goes down, chances are the wins per season goes up, you know, which is the one thing that we actually care about. All right, this one I'm fired up for, and I'll admit to you, dude, it came from me. All right, so this past week, Chris Webber was inducted into the 2021 Hall of Fame class. All right, and that response is exactly what I want to hear, because here's the question. Is it okay that I still fucking hate Chris Webber? And before you answer it, for those who are a little bit new to being Warrior fans and maybe too young to remember this, the Warriors were dog shit for decades before Steph. But there was kind of a lone diamond in that ashtray. The Warriors picked up Webber in a draft day trade. They got him in 1993, and for a year, it looked like shit was going to change. We were on the up and up. He even filmed a Nike commercial, one of my favorite Coupe commercials of all time.
Down the street from my house.
Boom, at the barbershop. Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. Where he dunks on Barkley. So, like, everything was changing. It was kind of cool to be Warriors fans. And then literally that offseason, after 1 year, he demands a trade. He says he cannot be coached by Don Nelson. He gets forced out, you know, and we end up with Tom Gugliotta and three shitty draft picks. And for years, it was all good to hate Webber. When he showed up in the Bay, we booed the hell out of him. I mean, just like the Princess Bride boo. Like, we booed with everything we had. But somewhere along the line, it's like we've forgotten that. Like, it doesn't happen anymore. So, Joe, I know you've been rooting for this team forever. I know you've got this passion. Am I being like this hatred? Let it go, or is it still justified?
No, no. Well, first off, he's a horrific broadcaster. That's number one. The guy's terrible. I'm sorry, he's terrible. Like, just be funny, be educational. Don't be yourself because you're not that good. Chris Webber's terrible. Here's the issue that I got with Webb. He never took accountability at any point in his life, whether it was the Michigan situation, which I don't blame kids per se, but he clearly lied under oath in that situation. Just admit it. Like, dude, look, man, come on. You got paid to go to Michigan and play with the Fab Five. Everybody knows that. You don't got to hide nothing. And I think time will end up proving that one to be true. But more than anything, it's like, dude, had you just listened to Nelly, and I don't think Nelly's perfect. Believe me, he's not above being criticized because he would throw guys in the doghouse all the time. Had you done that, you would have went straight to the Hall of Fame with the Golden State Warriors, averaging 15, 16 your entire career. The West was ripe to be picked off. And he wasted 2 or 3 years of his career, maybe even more, you know, floundering around in Washington before he figured it out in Sacramento. And then this is the part people forget. They got him back in 2008, the year after We Believe, and they tried to squeeze him into the starting role. And I swear to God, it cost them the one or two games that eventually led to them not making the playoffs the very next year. Look, the Jay Rich trade everyone references with Brandon Wright, throw that to the side. To me, it was just as egregious that they freaking started Chris Webber with like the arthroscopic knee with the microfracture injury, and the guy literally couldn't bend over and couldn't jump. My grandma, 91 years old, could jump higher than Chris Webber in 08. I'm telling you, those minutes cost the Warriors games down the stretch. I can't stand Webber. Don't even start. And Kings fans, Warrior fans that became Kings fans during that era drove me even more insane.
They lost their status as Warrior fans the second that happened. You can't be following them over. All you are is a bandwagon fan. That 2008 thing, shit, it's too bad that we didn't know each other back then, man. I could have used this kind of emotional support because Nelson was the coach then too.
I know.
And I kept waiting for fools to be like, look, at least acknowledge that this dude screwed us over in this exact scenario.
Let me throw another name at you. Both of you. I don't know. Derek Fisher is another name. If I hear him. Derek Fisher's name.
Fuck him. He left us. Left us after he signed a huge ass contract and then bounced immediately. Told us, if memory serves, it's because he wanted to play him. Like close to his daughter and then ended up bouncing from there too.
To go to Utah.
And
then beat us in the playoffs in 07.
Outside of 0.7 seconds, I don't remember anything that Derek Fisher ever did well on a basketball court. Marcus, I see that you have joined us. I'm fired up to have you. Start with the Webber thing, dude. So, Joe, Marcus is kind of our calm member of the show. You know, I get all fired up. I'm all over the place. Marcus tends to play it a little bit cooler, which is hell of annoying. So we'll see where he is on this. MT, you do you hate Webber or have you forgiven him?
Ah, yes, I am the calmer member. I'm split on this because my family went to University of Michigan. So
he screwed you over too. He screwed over Michigan as well.
It's go blue. I mean, the timeout is more egregious to me than getting paid. But
agreed.
Yes, yes. Thank you. Ultimately, I don't hate him. I mean, the Sacramento team was so fun to watch that it's hard for me to not like him. That team, I think, just got hosed by the referees and the Lakers in that playoff series and should have moved on to the finals. But
One of those fans? Wait a minute. Are you one of the people who went over to Sacramento and became a fucking Kings fan?
No, but I liked watching them. Like if I had NBA League Pass at that time, they would have been my second team.
See, Joe, I told you, hell of a
so what's funny is I hated the Kings as much as I hated the Lakers.
Of course
I was pulling for the Portland Jail Blazers at that time. Brian Grant was my guy. My guy.
Brian Grant.
Rasheed Wallace. I mean, all
Fonzie Wells.
For me, it wasn't even who Portland was. It's who they weren't. They weren't a team in California who was doing well while my team sucked ass. Yeah. You know, it's just like, I didn't care. I didn't care where the hell they were from. I just didn't want Sacramento to have any success at any point. Let's get personal, boys. Here's the question. You guys are nice enough to share a ton about your personality. We know that Bram is basically a bad person, that Marcus can't admit his faults, and that Maxime occasionally wears moccasins, which is crazy weird. I'd love to hear another portion of your mental makeup. If you are invited to someone's house, are you more likely to show up early or late? Here's what we do, Joe, instead of just answering these. We take these as an opportunity to judge one another. So let's start with me, boys. I will give you the actual truthful answer. But what's your guess? Marcus, what do you think? I get invited somewhere for a social situation. Am I more likely to get there a little early, or maybe I show up kind of late?
I think you get there early and try to leave as early as possible too, because you hate being around people.
We call that the hit and run.
Yeah, there you go.
Maxime, what's your take?
We're talking like when we say social situations, we're specifically referring to like drinking events and like kind of like more social atmospheres.
Yeah, like not something either work related or family related.
I hate
work related stuff.
Oh, it's the worst.
I hate it. I hate drinking around. I never do it around coworkers. It is so fake. It's the worst.
Maxime, we're gonna get to your answer, but just as a random aside, I worked for this firm hell of years ago, like 10 years ago, and in the right when I started, every like final Friday of the month, they would have this thing where everyone would get together and drink. But all the people who had been there for longer than 4 or 5 years would bounce immediately. Like, they'd have like one sip and then get the hell out of there. And you'd notice it and be like, oh, that's kind of scandalous. And then about 3 months in, you realize that wasn't scandalous. That was hell of smart.
Genius.
Like, they had already seen the professional situation go from professional to shit show. Mm-hmm. And they knew just like, nope, I'm going to go ahead and not be a part of this. But Maxime, back to judgment. What do you think, man?
Yeah, I think you show up a little bit late, right? Because I know you well enough to know that you feel a little bit of pressure to participate in these environments, right? And so, like, even if you wanted to get there on time, and like, even if they're your friends, you know, you still have this animosity towards the situation in general, and I think that causes you to just get delayed in getting there.
Joe, I won't make you guess because you and I have just met. But if you have a take on this, you're welcome to drop it. If not, I'll drop the truth there.
Well, like a married man, I'm sure that you show up late because I show up late to every function with my wife, no matter where we go. So that's what I'm going to go with.
Okay, well, fuck. Then let's work backwards. If I'm going anywhere with my wife, I'm getting there hell of late because she is crazy late to anywhere we go. So that's just is what it is. And that's a pet peeve for a different time. The actual response, so I'm somewhere in the middle here. So like being late is actually like something that pisses me off. If I invite fools through and they get there late, I get deep in my feelings. I might even throw you like kind of a passive aggressive text, you know, like, oh, are we still kicking it? But the other side to this is I like to show up occasionally fashionably late to like social situations because I think it makes me look fucking important. So I'm not above that. So the real response here is all of you guys are right. If I'm with my wife, I'm definitely late. Regardless of when I get there, I try to get the hell out of there as fast as I can because there's too many of like social situations. And if it's a business thing, I'm there like 10 minutes early. If it's a social thing, I'm there like a good 20 minutes late. And I pretend like I didn't know what time it was supposed to start. So I'm a bad guy. Let's go to Marcus. Let's guess. MT, I'll guess first. Late. Definitely late. I don't think you like to be late, but you and I have kicked it in enough scenarios where you are not there when I think you're going to be there. So I'm just going to flatly say late.
Nice.
Is it safe to call this a social situation? Because MT was late today.
Welcome back to Shithousing Marcus.
I'm going to go with early. He sounds like a very smart, diligent, detail-oriented individual.
Jesus, Joe, you've talked to him for like 5 seconds.
Yeah, but he seems very thoughtful.
Joe, you're my guy already. I like
you. Yeah, goddamn it. I hate your voice, Marcus, and I hate how apparently professional you sound. What's the real answer?
The real answer is I try to get there right on time because I hate having a bad seat. I hate having to be crammed in to two people who I don't want to talk to, or to be on the edge and you always have to get up because everybody wants to go to the fucking bathroom every 4 minutes. So I try to get there right on time because I know there's going to be people on both sides of that starting time and I can have a choice seat.
Do you only go to like couch parties? What are you talking about? Like, dude, you go in and you're immediately slotted into a sitting scenario?
No, I mean, you know, all the places that we go, even where we go, you know, like when we go out to a bar, like there are bench seats and there are seats. Like you got to strategically get there to get your seat correct.
Next time we hit the athletic club, wherever it is you see it, I'm going to immediately find like the most canned boring person and desperately ask them to sit next to you and screw you over.
I'll be there before you get there, so it won't happen.
Factually inaccurate. You and I have met and you're going to be there late. I know that for fucking sure. Let's go to Maxime. Joe, you apparently are nailing these things. You've been able to talk to Maxime for a little bit longer. What's your guess with him?
Yeah, a little neurotic, so I'm sure very early because he doesn't want to upset anyone. And I mean no disrespect.
Disrespect? You're a goddamn soothsayer. I feel like that is on the money, and I can speak from general experience. Well, no, you've been late a couple of times when we've hung out, but I will say early as a general matter, and I think it means something to you.
It's a good
thing. I think it's the kind of thing like if you get to places late, it causes you anxiety. Marcus, before he gives us the truth, what's your guess?
I'm going early, too. I think he does it out of respect to show that he cares about the other person giving their time up, too, because that's just how Maxime rolls.
What a professional, nice, perfectly phrased answer. Go fuck yourself, Marcus. Maxime, what's your guess?
So,
what's the truth?
What's my guess? Yeah, I'm just getting to know myself a little bit better today.
Look, we're all in therapy. There's a lot to learn. You know, it is what it is.
I like to pride myself on being somebody who is early, which is why it's so fucking brutal that I'm always late. The anxiety just, like, triples down on itself because I can't seem to figure it out. I'm trying to do too many things. I'm trying to record a podcast and then I gotta go to a meeting or whatever. So you're basically all right in understanding exactly who I am. Shout out to the listener for saying mental makeup. That was a nice alliteration there. We got a little bit more about my mental makeup here, which is that the anxiety is happening and I am late and it makes it all the worse.
Which leads us to Joe. So we've just met. We know the question. We're going to guess. And so my guess initially, Joe, and I'm going to pull back the curtain here, would have been that you can be late. Here's why. So, boys, I reached out to Joe via text. First, I reached out to him via Twitter. He was nice enough to share his number so that I texted him. Texted him on Saturday. And as you guys can imagine, anytime I'm texting a guest we haven't had on, it's like texting a hot girl for the first time. You know, like, I just want him to text back, and I'm hella fucking nervous about it. So I text him, I think, on Saturday. I get nothing back on Saturday. I'm checking my phone like 1,000 times. Yeah. I get nothing back on Sunday, checking 1,000 times. Then I get something back on Monday. So initially, I would have told you boys, hey, you know, he's late. Then I reread my text. I reread that first text, and it came off as one of those super canned-ass texts you get from, like, the people trying to talk you out of the recall. You know, like, and literally, here's the beginning of it. Hey, Joe, this is Bram from the Warriors Huddle podcast. Does next Wednesday wear? And I was like, oh, I bet you he just. So I think that was more on me. He came to today's show fairly early. So long story short, boys, I think this gentleman in that setting would be early is my guess. MT, I hope that you don't return the compliment, but I'm sure that you will. He had your back. Do you have his? What do you think?
I do have his back, and I was listening, and I think he's going to say late, and it's because his wife makes him late.
His wife's not coming. Oh my God. What an annoying answer again. Maxime?
Yeah, so, you know, we got to hear Joe's little story, and I feel like somebody that has worked a butcher shop, you know, and then has coached, understands the value of being on time. And as some of my biggest mentors have told me, if you're on time, you're late. You got to show up early.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Joe, what's the answer?
Well, so let me defend myself first on the text message. So my sister moved up to Roseville. No, because this is the truth. My sister moved up to Roseville. I go pick up my grandfather. It's my nephew's birthday. And so we're driving up to Roseville. And, you know, you plug your phone in. You're going to do the Google Maps or whatever, Apple Maps to go on up there. And you texted. And my wife looked at the phone because Bonte was texting me all day. She's like, do not text while driving with your grandfather in the car. You are not allowed to respond. And I got totally distracted. And I'm not trying to look. My phone goes crazy on Saturdays during football days because of all the degenerate gamblers that we work with at our station. And so I legitimately just forgot to text you back. And then I looked at my Twitter, whatever it was, a couple of days later. I'm like, oh my God, I forgot to respond to this text on Saturday. I'm always early to everything. You talk to, ask Bonte. Bonte will tell you, I'm the first one at the studio every single day. And that's not because of anything. I want to over deliver at every single turn. I'm in sales and I've been in sales my entire life. You show up ready to go, doing all your homework, being prepared. All right. And you are calm and relaxed and that way you can walk in with all the confidence in the world and you're not running late. People's time is valuable and I hate wasting it. Now, party settings, it is very scene dependent. Where are we going? Are we heading to a bar? Are we heading to a family member's house who I don't want to be alone with in the house before other people show up? That's different. Work settings, always early. B will tell you I'm the first one at the studio every single day. And that's more me always trying to over prepare because I don't want to leave any doubt that I'm working my ass off. And that goes back to being neurotic because, Maxime, let me tell you, I it takes one to know one. I'm crazy neurotic and full of anxiety. So, and if it's a sporting game, I'm never late and I never leave early. That is like a rule to me going to a sporting game. We are going to enjoy the entire experience.
Back to hoop, boys. And what it is a series of over-unders from your new best friend, Moses Moody. Joe, I saw your interview with him and you guys got a great story. Great story from him. But here's some of the over-unders. And here's our first. Moses Moody, points per game next year. This gentleman put it at 8.5. Modest number, but that's kind of what we're expecting from this front year. MT, take us first. Over, under 8.5.
Under, but not because he underperforms, just because there's not enough shots to go around once Clay gets back. And, you know, he'll be a great asset, but I think he averages a little under 8.5 for the year.
Joe, you agree?
This is a tough one because I got to kind of see what the flow is, what the rotations are. 8.5 points. I mean, you'd almost be doubling up what Draymond did last year, if we're being totally honest with you. And Draymond's out there a lot. That team's a little aggressive for me. I'd be really happy if he had a couple of months over 8.5 points because that tells me he's a piece in the rotation. And we know that Steve Kerr likes to yank the young guys at times. So that's a little rich for my blood. I'm going to hit the under, but I think there's a couple of individual months he might go over, especially toward the end of the season.
Maxime, let's shift it. The new number, 12.8. The over-under is minutes per game. I did a little background research. I know where this 12.8 came from. That's how many minutes per game Michael Mulder had for us last year. So next year, with Mulder's numbers as our guide, over-under minutes per game for Moses Moody, 12.8. Maxime, what do you got?
Wow, what a fascinating comp. That's actually surprising. I didn't realize that the number was that high for Mulder, quite frankly. But I think, you know, Joe was sort of kind of hinting at something that I think is really interesting here, which is this idea that, like, if the season's going well, you know, when we get to, like, you know, February-ish, we might see an uptick in that. And so that might balance it out. I'm gonna say over.
I'm going to say over for optimistic reasons. Something has got to hit for the Warriors to have the success that we're all kind of hinting around. There's a lot of lottery tickets that are possibilities. Maybe Jordan Poole takes a huge leap. Maybe Wiseman takes a huge leap. Maybe Moody is more of a contributor than we were previously thinking he might be. So just to be optimistic, if Mulder is our guide, I'll take the over. Last question. Back to you two boys. The number's 4, all right? Here's the over-under. How many years were Moses Moody playing Golden State? I had looked into this one, too. This is a guess, but it's an educated one. The reason why it's 4 is that right now he's under contract for 2 years. Then that third year is a team option. And then finally, the fourth one, they can make a qualifying offer. So, Joe, what do you think? Will Moody be making his home here in Golden State for more than the next 4 seasons?
You know, I'm going to say he is. You know, just being around this kid at 19 years old, and, you know, I've seen a lot of different athletes. 19, all right? I don't know how many of you guys got 19-year-olds in your life. I can't even get a 19-year-old to get out of bed and turn the PlayStation 5 off by 4 in the morning. You know what I'm saying? Like, this kid was very, very, very impressive, very humble, hardworking. I think that this is a really, really good player on the come up. Now, I think it might take some time, but I think they're going to keep him around. And his game translates. 3-and-D guys, those guys are easy to find spots for. I think he's going to fit in really well. And the other thing is, I don't think he's going to pop into a superstar per se. And I think that makes it a little more financially feasible to keep someone like that on the roster for a couple of years, because you got to round out that bench. So I'm gonna say he ends up staying. Yeah, I'm going to say 4. Yeah, over 4.
MT, is it safe to buy a Moody jersey? Do you agree?
I disagree, but not as a slight to Moses, as a compliment. I think it'll be under because he will be part of a trade package that we use to squeeze the last few years out of Steph than Clay and Draymond.
You still holding on to that, man? Do you think, I mean, Joe, to bring you into this so that you can wait with bated breath like I am, Marcus and I spent a lot of time before the draft saying, look, you know, Steph is probably the best player we're ever going to watch in a Golden State jersey. They have to maximize right now. It doesn't matter who they get in the draft. They need to bring in some help for him. Then they got Kuminga. I mean, they got who they got, which leads back to the question for you, MT. So after all the optimism around the young guys, in your heart of hearts, are you still thinking trade and bring in, you know, the Bradley Beals of the world?
Yeah, I still think he is going to be a great player, to Joe's point, in that he will be a solid 3-and-D player. And so will Kuminga. And I think Wiseman will grow into his role. I just think they'll be valuable pieces that will bring back somebody who's not available right now. Karl-Anthony Towns, Anthony Davis, somebody who we're not expecting to be available. And it'll be too hard to pass up to not include Moody as a piece to not only make the salaries work, but to make the talent work for the other team to bite.
Did you just throw in Anthony Davis? Are you starting a trade rumor for Anthony Davis right now?
I think so. I mean, he's always injured. We joke about it. And I think he's, you know, catastrophically injured once every game. But I think, you know, once LeBron starts to wind down in the next 2 years, that it'll be a consideration. He loves LA, so who knows? He may just want to be the face of that franchise, but to partner with Steph and Clay and Draymond and squeeze another championship run out might be a good look.
Do you know how fucking entertaining it would be for me if Clutch Sports went to Anthony Davis, talked him out of his own franchise in New Orleans, brings him over to LA, and then as LeBron's career is slowly fading, they trade his ass out so that they can give like LeBron some other kind of help? Like, that would be, I don't think it's going to happen, but that would be so fantastic.
Draymond. Jeez. Draymond's in their ear. He's Clutch.
There you go. Draymond. Our last question, boys, and I know I've kept us crazy long, so we'll get through this one fast. It's an illustration of how crazy I am, and I need some advice, all right? So third time I've mentioned, again, I'm a parent, and she is now getting to this age, dude, where she's in school. She was in kindergarten last year, but last year was a pandemic year. So even though, like, she was meeting all these new kids and shit, oh, dude, it's weird, and there's all these other problems with it. But one of the upside is, for an entire year, we were able to push off those super awkward social interactions where you have to meet all the other parents, you know? And so now they're happening, dude. They're happening for the first time. And a couple weeks ago, we had one of the first birthday parties that we showed up to. And just as an aside, man, I haven't had like social anxiety like that since like junior high, you know, like coming into a group of people that I now have to somehow make friends with and try to like, oh, like, no, don't you like me? Like, I just haven't had to do that for so long. So that sucked ass. But that's not the story. Story is this. So we're sitting there, everyone's desperately trying to make conversation, and I meet this dude who tells me he's from Boston, but he's living in Oakland, the city I was born and raised in, and that he really likes the city, but he's noticed that there's so many transplants in Oakland now that the city is kind of ruined and he no longer likes it, right? So for me, that'd be like if someone told me, like, look, I like to bring 3-course meals into this movie theater, but the reason I don't like that theater is because too many people eat in there. It's like, what the fuck, dude? Like, you're causing the problem. You can't bring this out. But here's the question. So if you're me in that scenario, and you're, you know, you're kind of trying to make friends. You don't really know this dude. It's an up and up conversation, but he takes a shot at your hometown, essentially, right? And calls out gentrification, even though he is the gentrifier. Do you say something in that scenario, Joe? Like, would you call him out passive aggressively, or do you just, you know, nod and smile and like it is what it is? Just try to get out of there and eat it.
Man, I like to just do, wow. Interesting. And I just nod my head and let them continue to just talk. And then I pray that someone pulls me in another direction, or I pretend like my phone's ringing. And then I like pick up a phone. Hello. Hello. I got to take this. I'll be right back. Like, that's, we have an aunt in the family and this stays here, but she'll like suck you into these conversations that go nowhere. And the key is, you go, you know what you're saying is very important, but I have to go refill my drink. I'll be right back. And then you turn around and they suck someone else into that conversation. Yeah. You got to hit the eject button, bro. I don't know. Just anything you can to try to move away and get away from that, because that's ridiculous.
Marcus, I see you being like calm and curious in that scenario. Like, just like, huh, like, tell me more about that. Like, not being upset and like actually having the conversation with him instead of getting like deeply triggered into your feelings, like it sounds like Joe and I would.
I'd be deeply triggered. I would just give a very passive comment, like, yeah, it's a problem. And then just kind of in my head, just be like, the lack of self-awareness with this dude is like, our kids can't be friends.
How about you, Maxime? Or would you be too late and then just not even hear the conversation?
Yeah, that's exactly right. This is something I think about a lot, because this stuff does sort of grind my gears. And I get, you know, you get into these environments sometimes and I don't actually have that ability to exit, right? Because what I'm stressing about then is when I pull my phone out and the person sees that the screen didn't light 100%. Up, right?
Oh, yeah. 100%.
And I'm like, oh, I got to take this, right? Yeah. And then now I'm stressing that they're judging me, even though I was the one that was judging them trying to get out of the conversation. I'm now worried about their perception of me.
Oh, I can see the, like, I pull off the Shasky phone to the head. Sorry, I got to take this. And then as I'm taking that phone call, my phone actually does ring.
That's where you guys have to pivot. The whole key is pivoting and turning the body the phone is coming out of the pocket. I mean, I always say, pivot, don't panic. It's a basketball term. It works perfectly in this situation.
I like it. Or you could get there on time like me and you don't have to worry about sitting next to him.
Yeah. I mean, again, I've met you. Exactly. I've had social situations and you're not there on time. So I refuse to accept that answer. I panicked. I completely panicked. I stayed silent for a while. I think I forced out a laugh, even though like it wasn't a funny like comment at all. And then ultimately ran over to my wife and pretended like she said something to me. So I panicked, then pivoted. So I almost followed your advice, you know.
We agree? Boston people are the worst.
Oh, they're the worst.
I mean, they're the worst. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. All of the Northeast is the worst because I just don't get it.
No, but
Boston's
definitely
the worst, right?
Well, and I think, and I don't say this lightly, and this will be a conversational topic for a different podcast, but I think Boston sports fan might be worse sports fan. Oh. You know, I mean, like USC fan is there, Dodger fan is, I mean, like there's people in my life who I you know, gets out genuine anger if I'm in their company, but almost across the board, regardless of the team, Boston sports fan is the worst. Joe, you're fucking awesome. I know I'm not the only one thinking that. For people who need more Shasky in their life, where do they go?
You check me out on Insta, Twitter, ButcherBoy415. But more importantly, go to 95.7 The Game. Listen to us, me and Bonte Hill, every morning, Monday through Friday, 6 to 10, the morning roast. It feels surreal just saying that out loud. Sorry, I wasn't prepared.
Yeah, well, for us, you know where to find us. Our only social media presence is on Twitter at Warriors Huddle. If you want to shoot us a take, we did well, we did poorly, whatever it is, you can shoot us an email, warriorshuddle@gmail.com. But maybe most important, I teased this up front, we've got big changes coming, boys. Every now and again, someone will shoot us an email asking to shoot them a picture or what the hell do we look like. I have no idea why, but we are going to take advantage of that. Starting in a few weeks, for our Patreon supporters who we love and genuinely respect and appreciate, we're going to start doing a video podcast. So if you have any interest in seeing that, hey, you can just make fun of how we look. It doesn't matter. But if you would like to be a part of it, join us on Patreon, P-A-T-R-E-O-N. Look up Warriors Huddle. You can support us for as little as like a dollar a month. And you can hit on that video with that in mind. Go Warriors. Hopefully, we'll see you next week.
Good, good.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.